Do you ever feel like your to-do list is running your life instead of the other way around? I see you, powerhouse, and I'm here to help you regain your sanity. As a busy wife, mom, and entrepreneur myself, my to-do list seemed never-ending. In fact, I often had multiple, not to mention that nagging feeling of never getting enough things crossed off. The overwhelm was constantly churning in my head. That is until I started utilizing the brain dump. That's right. This simple yet strategic exercise completely transformed my life. And I've started sharing it with my clients and it's transformed theirs as well. So I have to share it with you, my audience. That's why I'm so excited to introduce the Powerhouse Brain Dump, a better way of getting shit done, a game-changing ebook that is about to revolutionize the way you tackle tasks. My transformative method empowers you to banish the chaos and overwhelm and learn how to offload your mental clutter onto paper and provide a clear roadmap for action and success. This is not your typical productivity guide. No, no. It's a revolutionary approach for the fearless female lawyer who's ready to break free from overwhelm and reclaim her powerhouse status. So what are you waiting for? Say hello to a more organized and focused you. Grab your copy of the Powerhouse Brain Dump, a better way of getting shit done today by clicking on the link in the show notes or go directly to erangerner.com.
So that's kind of what I'm advocating now, is that the more we get to know ourselves and talk about these things and study these things, we can work better in teams, because extroverts can realize what introverts need, but introverts can also realize what extroverts need. And so as teammates to do our jobs great, we can enhance each other's performance and our happiness, which is more important.
You are more than a lawyer. You are a powerhouse. Welcome to Powerhouse Lawyers. I'm your host, Erin Gerner, a former lawyer, wife, mom, entrepreneur, and coach. And I'm here to show you what's possible. So if you're ready, let's go. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I'm so excited that you guys are here. I have a great guest for you guys today. And if I have any introverts listening to this podcast, which I know that I do, this is the episode for you. I know that in the legal profession, it feels challenging to feel like you are not this person who charges into the room and wants to like shake hands and hold babies and, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's just not your personality. You know, don't want to stay the whole time at a networking event. You don't want to like go in when you don't know anybody. You maybe get nervous before you go to court or a presentation or whatever. You just feel like you're more introverted than your extroverted friends. However, it's just been shown to you all along that somehow you have to operate like your extroverted friends. You have to be go, 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 the Energizer bunny, doing all the things for all the people, when in fact, that just does not feel good to you. And it is absolutely exhausting you and your career, because you're trying to show up as somebody who you're not. So our next guest is going to actually give you a permission slip to show up as your authentic introverted self. And she's got some great tips on how to actually just put stuff in place where you can be like, you know what, that doesn't feel good. So I'm going to put some habits or some boundaries or some rituals in place that actually do make me feel good. Maybe I'm just going to decide before I go to a networking event how long I'm going to stay there, instead of when I get there feeling like I need to stay the whole time, when really my body and like my mind can only take an hour or an hour and a half of something that overly stimulating. So I really hope you enjoy our next guest. I'm also so excited to introduce this next thing to you guys. It launched last week. It's called Powerhouse Elite. If you have been following along with me for however long, you know that I host in-person retreats for female lawyers. They are completely life-changing. I just got back from my third one in Scottsdale, Arizona. That will be a whole separate episode in and of itself. But I want to tell you the thing that I know. Community, connection, and coaching are what is going to take you to the next level in your life and in your legal career. I've seen it over and over and over again. And the synergy that I create within the community of Powerhouse Lawyers. Powerhouse Elite takes it to the next level. You get an in-person experience, you get coaching, you get support, you get a community, and you get the Rolodex of connections and networking people of your dreams. This is the community that you want to be a part of in 2024. check out the link in the show notes to get more information on Powerhouse Elite. There are limited spots available, but I hope you guys enjoy the show and our next guest. Thanks so much. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I'm so excited to have my friend, Professor Heidi Brown, on the show today. Thank you so much for coming. She is a graduate of the University of Virginia School of Law. She's also the Associate Dean for Upper Level Writing at New York Law School, and she's also a former litigator. And she is the author of 3 books about well-being for law students and lawyers. So you know that she and I are going to jive on this podcast. She is building off of her foundation of 30 years of legal practice in academia to champion the importance of openly discussing stressors, anxieties, and fears in lawyering. She helps quiet and anxious law students and lawyers tap into their individual strengths to become profoundly effective advocates in their authentic voices. She is an internationally recognized public speaker on issues including lawyer identity, writer identity, peak performance, and flourishing. She lives in NYC, loves writing books, traveling solo, taking boxing lessons, and going to YouTube concerts, which she just got back from on the heels of this podcast. So welcome to the show, Heidi. I'm so excited you're here.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So we just kind of heard the Reader's Digest version of Heidi, but I would love if you would take us back to the beginning and tell us how you've come full circle in this lawyering life.
Oh my gosh, it has been full circle. So I grew up in Virginia and I went straight through to law school right after undergrad and the same university. So I thought, you know, I loved college. I thought law school was going to be the same as college. It absolutely was not. As you can tell from my bio, I'm an introvert, but I didn't really know that when I was in law school. I just knew that I was having trouble doing sort of the performance aspects of law school, speaking in class, trying out for the moot court teams, going on interviews, things like that, oral arguments. But, you know, I pushed my way through it and I got a job after law school as a construction litigator. And I didn't know what those two words meant put together, construction and litigation, but I needed a paying job. And that's the job I got. And I ended up doing that for 15 straight years where, you know, the research and writing was really my strength. I loved figuring out complicated legal problems. But again, the performance aspects of being a lawyer always really rattled me. I have a very robust blushing response, which you might see on screen today. So whenever I got nervous, my face would turn really red. And I always felt really embarrassed, like everyone was staring at me and could tell I was really nervous. So fast forward, in my 15th year of litigating, I started teaching for the first time, and I've been doing that for 15 years. The first 5 years of teaching, I overlapped with my lawyering career. I was still working at the firm. But when I started teaching, I started realizing that my strongest legal writing students, my most creative problem solvers, deepest thinkers, most thoughtful analysts of these complex topics were also the students that were the most afraid, like me. They were the ones who would confide to me that they were scared of being cold called in class or trying out for the teams that they wanted to be on. And they were intellectually prepared to do those tasks, but they were nervous. So that led me to start researching all this. I needed to figure out how to help myself first before I could help my students and model for them that you can be a quiet, introverted person and you can grapple with anxiety and fear, but let's start talking about all that out loud so we can I like the verb untangle, so we can untangle it all and figure out how to really tap into our inner power authentically. Everyone always told me, fake it till you make it, but that doesn't work for me. My face was always bright red and there's no faking that. So.
No. So how did you reconcile being an introvert and being like having this, you know, anxiety and fear while you were litigating for 15 years in the construction world, which is not for the faint of heart. So tell us how you were able to reconcile those feelings while you were litigating.
I didn't do a good job of reconciling it then. I so wish I could go back now and have a do-over of every deposition where and every court appearance where, again, I was substantively prepared, but like my brain and my emotions and my body, my physical body would get the best of me. So I didn't reconcile it while I was going through it, but I've reconciled it really through this research and writing. I love to write. It's kind of one of my four pillars of well-being, which I'm happy to share with you. But through writing and researching other experts in introversion, like Susan Cain wrote this amazing book called Quiet. And I realized, wow, you know, introversion is not a weakness. It's actually a superpower because we think a lot. We think very deeply and methodically. We take in a lot of stimuli that you know, not that there's being an extrovert or introvert is one better than the other, but we can sit there while other people are talking and really absorb lots of different ideas and then synthesize all that into solutions to problems. So I think I've reconciled it now, and I'm kind of the ambassador for how we can be our authentic, quiet selves, but still really have a powerful impact in the profession.
I love it. Well, tell us how introverts do that, because I'm also curious about this. I want to ask you this, like, personally about myself. I'm just thinking about this question on the fly. So I've always categorized myself as an extrovert. I mean, I've got my podcast. I'm always talking, this and that or whatever. But as I've gotten older, I'm thinking that maybe, like, I'm an introvert, extrovert. Like, I like being by myself. I like this alone time. I don't know if I ever, like, allowed myself that time when I was younger, right? To, like, actually embrace the fact that I needed that time to, like, come back to center instead of, like, energy, go, 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 go. But I'm curious, like, do you hear that from a lot of lawyers these days? Like, or is this just because we're getting old, or is this an actual thing?
I think it's an actual thing. So introversion and extroversion, well, introversion also is different from shyness and social anxiety. Like you can be a really confidently social introvert, but if you have the added layer of social anxiety and shyness, which I did, I think I've worked through that now. That's a fear of judgment and criticism. But introversion, extroversion are just the ways that we as individuals differently process competing stimuli coming at us, and also how we replenish energy. So extroverts both introverts and extroverts can highly function in highly stimulating environments. Like, I live in New York, you know, Times Square is like the most highly stimulating environment. In fact, I try to never go there because there's, you know, lights and billboards and sirens and cartoon people dressed up as cartoon characters, and there's honking of horns, and it's very overwhelming. So when I was practicing law, the courthouse was like that for me. You know, lots and lots of activity, lots of stress, you know, metal detectors, the docket, finding different courtrooms. So for me as an introvert, I can function in that environment, but it drains energy out of me really quickly. So we can ramp up and handle our jobs in those highly stimulating environments, but where an extrovert might gain energy from that stimulation, an introvert is depleted in energy by that stimulation. And then the way we replenish energy, introverts need, as you described, need to be alone. I mean, or need to be in a quiet space, really reduce all that stimulation. So back in the day when I was practicing, I used to end, you know, a 7-hour deposition day with 9 lawyers objecting to every one of my questions, or like a courthouse visit, and need to either go home or go for a walk, or if I had to go back to the office, shut my door. But because I worked with a bunch of extroverts, they didn't like it when my door was closed. But I didn't understand back then that how to articulate what I needed as an introvert to be able to do my best work. So that's kind of what I'm advocating now, is that the more we get to know ourselves and talk about these things and study these things, we can work better in teams, because extroverts can realize what introverts need, but introverts can also realize what extroverts need. And so as teammates, to do our jobs great, we can enhance each other's performance and our happiness, which is more important.
Absolutely. So tell us, for the people who are listening and they're like, okay, well, am I an introvert? Am I an extrovert? So can you kind of go through that with us? And after you've identified really what the characteristics, maybe people are like, I am an introvert. Like, that totally resonates with me. Like, I need to shut my door. I need to go on a walk. I need to, like, be alone. Can you help us maybe with some basic tools for how they can start voicing what they need and communicating with maybe the extroverts in their life?
Sure. And I highly recommend reading books about introversion. Like I mentioned, Susan Cain's book. I wrote a book called The Introverted Lawyer. And what happens for introverts and extroverts, it's important to understand and start to pay attention to when do you feel energized by being around people and when do you feel depleted by being around people. Other things that introverts and extroverts do differently. So like introverts might prefer to communicate through writing rather than speaking. Like, and also we don't like interrupting people. So during the whole, you know, beginning of the pandemic when we were all on Zoom all the time, the extroverts, because I was in a lot of group meetings, and the extroverts would always be like, just unmute yourself, you know, just interrupt whenever you feel like it. And every introvert was like, I will literally never do that.
You're like, that is my actual worst fear in real life right now.
Totally. I don't want, even in a meeting, I'm never going to be the person that will interrupt somebody. And also when I'm speaking and someone interrupts me, my idea just flies out of my head. So that's kind of an introverted trait, but we like writing because we can, whenever I'm in a big meeting and I need to present, I will literally write out on my notebook exactly what I'm going to say. One problem for introverts is one of the experts, another book I read, I'm blanking on the author right now, but she said introverts can edit ourselves into silence because, because we want to get our phrasing perfect. Whereas an extrovert really likes to engage out loud right away, and they might not have their idea fully vetted or it might not be perfect, but they're ready to interact with another person and will eventually get to that perfect phrase. Whereas an introvert is doing all that internally. And then I was going to say something else. And again, it just flew out of my head because I'm an introvert.
Well, that's exactly right. And this is what happens also. And it's called being like just being a high achieving woman. We have so much, so many things going on in our head. Like I will ask my husband, I was like, do you feel like I have early onset Alzheimer's or am I just like, what is going on right now? Like I will be talking and literally the thought is just completely gone. Like it was there and then all of a sudden it's into thin air, but I'll circle you back.
Okay.
So help our introverts understand themselves a little bit more. What do they need to start paying attention to about themselves and what are some self-care things that can help them adjust and like really get the rest that they need to like rejuvenate themselves?
One term that I learned in researching all this was the concept of somatic intelligence. So we all have, you know, our intelligence, and we've heard of emotional intelligence, but somatic intelligence is understanding what's happening in our physical bodies when we are stepping into these kind of lawyering scenarios or social scenarios in which kind of ignites our introversion and our extroversion. So for me, and what somatic intelligence means is paying attention to how your physical body is reacting in certain situations. Now, I know that I need to prepare myself to ramp up for a very highly stimulating environment, like a party or a networking. Oh my gosh, networking events are also my biggest nightmare. But as an introvert, what I started doing is saying, okay, I'm going to prepare myself for this and treat myself kind of like an athlete or a performer and put on something that makes me feel powerful, you know, cool, not necessarily fancy, but like an outfit that I feel cool and powerful in. And then I set a time limit for myself because I used to always feel like I had to compete with my extroverted friends who would stay at these networking events for the whole time. And I realized I couldn't do that. That I can be really engaging for, you know, an hour, maybe an hour and a half. So I make a point to go to events with a time limit, giving myself permission to not stay for the whole thing, and then have real conversations with maybe three people instead of trying to meet everybody, which is just never going to work for me. So those are some tips that have started to work for me, being really consciously aware of my physical body and when I'm starting to feel antsy or uncomfortable or just tired, annoyed, bored. All those manifest in our physical bodies. And then planning ahead, though, for events and just knowing that we don't have to stay for the whole time. We can be really impactful as networkers or as communicators. And then I've started saying out loud, you know, I'm going to introvert out here, you know, or I'm queen of the Irish exit. I like my friends.
Oh, that's amazing.
Know. Yeah. My friends know, they'll be like, where's Heidi? Oh, she Irish exited again. and they're not, they don't take it personally because they know that I just need to retreat and replenish, and then I'll be good to go for the next event.
And I think that's so important. And what I hear from you is just, first of all, a level of awareness about yourself and what your is actual going on in your body, what your actual feelings are and what you need, and then giving yourself permission to give yourself that.
Yes.
Like, it sounds simple, but it's actually very hard because you said it so many times, this idea of trying to compete with your extrovert friends. And you're never going to be able to do that, right? Like, you are not the Energizer Bunny. You are not the person that stays till last call. And that's okay. You don't need to be that person to make an impact. So, like, literally what I heard was you just giving introverts the permission slip to just honestly see themselves and just ask for what they need, and just knowing that it doesn't have to be the same as our extrovert friends, and that you can still be equally successful, impactful, have a slew of friends and do all the things, but not feel completely exhausted all the time. And mm-hmm. I also love that you made the differentiation between being an introvert and an extrovert, and also being like shy and having social anxiety. I think that, like, that's a whole nother thing, like an added layer of this. Like, people are afraid to be like, I'm an introvert because that means I'm shy. Well, no, that doesn't necessarily mean that. That just means that you need to rest and you cannot take on as much energy at the same time as maybe your neighbor. So I've got a question here. I'm going to land this plane. I love that you went in the direction of kind of the sports analogy, because I love the book Alter Ego. I'm on a blank of who actually wrote that book, but it truly is where you put on your alter ego, right? Like, you get prepared mentally, physically, emotionally, and you give yourself the time limit, whatever it is. And you go in there and you put on your Teflon suit of armor, your networking Teflon suit of armor, and you go in there and you do your thing. And then you retreat back to your introversion in your car. And you go do that. So I would love if you would expand on the sports analogy. As a sports person myself, I love this. So talk us through that.
Yes. It was really when I started treating myself like an athlete and or a performer, for people who for whom the athlete model doesn't work. But for me, I put myself in boxing lessons. I literally started treating myself like an athlete. And what I learned is to trust my rise and fall of kind of those anxiety symptoms. Because when I'm in a stressful or not stressful, but a highly impactful, you know, sports scenario, I know that my heart racing and my sweating or my face turning red is going to go away. It's just that I'm exerting myself. And it's made me a lot more confident in understanding that when I'm nervous about a particular performance I have to give or a networking thing or an interview or whatever, I can trust that, oh, wait, I've done this before and it turned out okay. So in studying this and treating myself like an athlete or performer, you know, doing a lot of public speaking, and I grappled with extreme public speaking anxiety for the 15 years of my first 3 years of law school, 15 years of being a construction litigator.
Why my first question to you was like, man, this whole like being a severe introvert and then you go into construction litigation. I'm like, Lord, sister, you just had to hold on tight.
I did. But now I realize, okay, I'm still going to be nervous because all those, I have a not very nice mental soundtrack. So, you know, I hear a lot of negative thoughts when I'm about to do these things. But as an athlete, I treat myself like a lawyer athlete. You know, I've put in the work. I know what I'm talking about. I care about the subject matter. And there's a concept in sports we've all probably heard of when you're called a clutch performer. So athletes are sometimes called clutch performers, and it's because they know, okay, I'm about to step into this zone where for the next 10 minutes or 30 minutes or 2 hours, my performance is really on the line. This is where I have to channel all that energy and dedication into just this limited amount of time. So again, kind of that theme of giving ourselves permission to limit the amount of time. In a performance moment, we can tell ourselves, okay, this feeling of anxiety or heightened tension isn't going to last for the rest of my life. It's going to last for just this event. And I can handle that because I've done it before. Twyla Tharp, the choreographer, loves to talk about routines and rituals because she said it puts us in the mindset of, okay, I've done this before. It was good. I'm going to do it again.
Builds confidence. And so
treating ourselves, yes.
It builds confidence.
And trust. It's trusting ourselves. It might not always go perfectly. We might not always win, but we can trust that we've done it before. It was good. We can do it again.
That's awesome. And you will survive. Like, yeah. That's the thing, you know, like I tell my daughters that too. You know, it's really one of those things. It's learning to, even though you have the fear, it's doing it in spite of the fear because you trust yourself enough to know that you are going to make it through. You can get to the other side. It's only temporary and you've done it before. And it's literally just, again, like we said, building that trust and confidence muscle over and over and over again through repetition. And I agree, like boundaries and, you know, rituals and habits set you up to succeed. Like, for example, you said, I give myself a time limit. You up front are setting yourself up to not get depleted at a networking event because you've already put the guardrails in place before you've even walked out the door about how you are going to mentally handle that, how long you are physically going to be able to handle it, and then what you're going to do emotionally after that to recover and replenish yourself. I mean, like I'm all about the sports analogy. So I would love if you would give maybe our viewers some tips because your zone of genius and your superpower is teaching, you know, introverted and anxious lawyers how to shine in their authentic voice. So talk to us a little bit more how you guide lawyers to that point and some tips for our introverts today.
Okay. And this can apply for introverts, but or also people who experience the fear, because we mentioned fear. You mentioned you talked to your daughters about, you know, you can feel the fear, but do it in spite of the fear. For me, I always try to force myself, you know, do it anyway, just do it, you know, do something every day that scares you, which I had to finally, again, tell myself, you have permission to stop listening to the mantras, because just me doing it the same way every time and pretending I wasn't afraid doesn't work for me. That can work for some people. So for me, I had to decide, okay, I'm going to untangle the fear. Instead of just conquering my fear or facing my fears, that wasn't working. So I needed to take time to untangle my fear. So advice that I give myself, but also law students and lawyers and people that I talk to about this is first, reflect. So do some mental reflection and some physical reflection about what are we actually afraid of when we're stepping into that performance. What are we afraid of? Is it really that we're scared of that particular judge or that particular opposing counsel or standing up to maybe someone who we feel like is trying to intimidate us? When you peel back all those layers, 9 times out of 10, the fear that we have is really more like fears we had in high school of like being rejected or excluded from the club, you know, or looking foolish or making a mistake. But we can handle that. Like we can, if we peel back those layers, we can understand, okay, that we can deal with because we're doing the work, we're working hard. Second is kind of the physical reflection, which I've mentioned before, getting somatically intelligent. What does it feel like in our bodies when we feel that first face heats up, turns red, which makes me self-conscious. And then I shrug my shoulders. And so in the fight, flight, or freeze response, I first freeze and then I want to flee. But what happens is our brain, it's science, our brain shut down when we go into fight, flight, or freeze. So in order for us to perform like athletes or performers, even if we're afraid, we have to reverse that. We have to realize it's happening and then recalibrate. So what I do is I realize when the negative mental soundtrack is kicking in and I have to stop it and kind of like that old firefighter mantra of stop, drop, and roll. I'm like, stop. Okay, I'm not going to literally drop and roll outside of the room, but that's what my body wants to do. And then when the blush kicks in, I read this amazing book by this woman, Erica Hilliard. She wrote a book called Living with Shyness and Social Anxiety. And she's the first person to ever describe blushing in a way that I think is just epically cool. She says, a blush is life coursing through you. It's like your life leaving little footprints, little red footprints. And when I read that, I laughed out loud and I thought, oh my gosh, you know, I'm blushing. I'm alive. Yay me. You know, it's, and now when I sense that, you know, those little flickers of fear and the mental soundtrack kicks in, I stop and I literally write it out sometimes. And I'm like, no, you've done the work like an athlete, you know, you're mentally prepared, you're substantively prepared. You care about what you're about to do. It doesn't have to go perfectly. In fact, imperfection is more real and authentic. And then with the physical, I feel the blush and I say, okay, I'm alive. Yay, me. Thank you, Erica Hilliard, for that. And I have to shift my shoulders back and stand like in a power pose. Or if I'm sitting, I do like that great TED talk by Amy Cuddy on power poses. You can't see me on the screen, but like stand, like sit like a boardroom executive with your hands behind your head, or like a superhero with your hands on your hips, and recalibrate your physical frame. So I just layer those two things on top of each other. First of all, the reflection to understand in advance what happens to you mentally and physically, but then in the moment, just recalibrating your mental soundtrack, physically changing the way you're holding your body, and then stepping into that performance arena again with that clutch mindset, like, okay, I can do this for 10 minutes, yeah, or I can do this for the next 45 minutes. And it doesn't have to go perfectly. I'm going to be more authentic if I'm my real self. And you do the best you can, and then you recalibrate for next time.
Exactly. And imperfect is the way to go. Like I say, messy action, that is my like theme of life, is messy action. That's because nothing gets done unless you take messy action. But I also love that you pointed out in the reflection part that it's important to realize where these emotions, like what these feelings actually mean. And a lot of times, as you know, through the research, I'm sure it's this younger version of ourselves, right? Like this inner child and reparenting, and that's a whole nother podcast. But, you know, it's really thinking back to that version of ourselves and being like, what did that version of ourselves need to hear at that moment, and giving ourselves that in the present moment, right? Like the younger version of me was scared of being left out because no one ever wanted to play with me on the playground, or like whatever it is. And it's telling, you know, like whatever little Heidi or little Aaron or whatever, and saying like, hey, you know, I see you, I understand, but my champion self, like my ready to go and like do get in the arena self knows and can keep you safe and all of those kind of things. And it's just giving ourselves permission to go back and identify those feelings, because those feelings are going to continue to come up unless you identify and start to heal that part of yourself.
Absolutely. And we all have aspect of our personal lives now in which we aren't afraid. So there's this exercise that I've done before called comparative fearlessness, and helping us identify one aspect of our personal lives in which maybe society thinks we should be afraid, like we're doing something a little risky or a little wild, but we're not afraid at all. Like for me, that's solo travel. Like I can get on a plane and go somewhere by myself and I'm not afraid. And meanwhile, my parents are like, oh my gosh, don't do that. Or my friends are like, what? Why are you going by yourself? But I'm not afraid. But then I'm stepping into a situation in which I literally have 30 years of experience and I should not be afraid, like speaking at a faculty meeting or you know, doing presentations or even teaching. Sometimes I still get nervous walking into my classroom and I'm afraid. Comparing those two things, it boils down to that fear of judgment and fear of criticism, that high school feeling and of feeling left out, feeling excluded. And that we can work with, because we can, again, this word recalibration, we can remind ourselves, okay, in 2024, do we really need to be worried about whether, you know, the popular girl in high school likes us or not? No, like we're cool. We got to just own it, because when we do the things in our lives now in which we feel that little bit of swagger, we're totally not afraid. We can channel that into our professional work, which does stoke fear sometimes. So just reminding ourselves of that every day.
I love it. I really think that you have just given the introverts so much power and fire, and just really an opportunity to just embrace this. Do you know what I mean? I think especially in the legal profession, it's so easy to feel crippled by this, because you've got all of these people who are like velociraptors out there and just like in just extreme extroverts, right? Like, and are loud and front and center and always have an opinion and this and that. And you feel like part of you has to shrink into the background or into the corner, that you are not ever going to be able to shine. And I think that you have just reconciled this in a huge way for the men and women who are listening to this, who maybe feel like that and just know that this is something that they can actually control, right? That they have control. They can make a different choice. They can tell themselves a different story and show up a different way while still preserving their energy and their sanity, frankly.
Completely. I mean, I spent way too much time back in my 20s and 30s trying to mirror the behavior of the really kind of loud, confident, aggressive lawyer. Not that all extroverts are aggressive by any means, but these were particularly aggressive and often not so nice. I spent so much time trying to mirror their behavior because I thought that's how I was supposed to act to be a quote good attorney, good construction lawyer. When I stopped doing that and finally started to be kind of my quiet, measured self and relying more on my writing to be my voice, it made my actual voice more confident, but not in a way that mirrored those people. I was so much more myself and people started listening to me more. So I really think the more we can figure out who we are and who we want to be and tap into that instead of trying to mimic other people's behavior, just the better everything flows from us. Our intellectual output is just so much better.
Yes. And life feels better. It doesn't feel like sandpaper, you know, it just doesn't feel like an itchy sweater. It feels good. Feels so good. I think that's an awesome note to end on, but I'm not going to let you go right yet because I need to grab your Legally Blonde moment before I let you off the hook here. Can you share something funny or amusing that has happened to you? It doesn't even have to be recent. It can just be anything.
Does it have to be law related?
No, it can be anything. I mean, girl, if I told you about the last 48 hours of my life 2 days ago, you would be on the floor. So it can be anything.
Okay, well, I'm going to be the same because the 48 hours, so this past weekend, as we mentioned, I'm a huge U2 fan. I'm a huge fan of the band U2, like kind of a borderline obsessive. And I just went to Vegas this weekend, Las Vegas, for the final two shows of this 6-month residency that they did. And I went with one of my great girlfriends who's also a U2 fan. And Thursday night, there was a tribute band. And so then the real shows were Friday and Saturday. And there's a song that the band that U2 plays called Mysterious Ways. And in their music video ages ago, they had a belly dancer on the stage. And actually, I think that choreographer ended up marrying one of the guitarist. That's in the video. But long story short, so the tribute bands always bring a female fan up on the stage to mimic the belly dancing situation in that Mysterious Ways video. And so I'm sitting there having fun, kind of rocking out at the tribute band show. And then it comes time for the fake Bono, the fake, you know, lead singer. He's like, I need help from one fan. And in my head, I'm like, oh no. It's time for me to go hide now because I'm an introvert. Even though I've been bouncing up and down in my own little zone for an hour during the show, of course they pick me to be the Mysterious Ways belly dancer. They put, skirt on me that has little sparkly things. And I just decided, you know what? I'm just going to go all in.
YOLO. You're just going to YOLO right now, Heidi. This is it. You only live once.
I totally went all in. I don't know where this fire came from in me, but I was like all over it. And hopefully there are no videos of that floating around.
Oh, I hope that there are. You have got to memorialize that.
I know people were videotaping it, but I thought, okay, well, I hope I don't get fired over being the belly dancer in a fake U2 tribute band. But it was a ton of fun, and the guys in the band were great, and I actually just totally enjoyed it. So that's my thing about how when you are living your introverted life and you're in your zone, somehow it just all channels into zest and happiness and fun. And, you know, you got to go for these things. So that's my.
Well, and when in Vegas, right? I mean, when in Vegas, it makes us act a fool, girl. Like it just gets up in your blood and your veins. We all might be belly dancing in Vegas. Who knows?
I was dancing my heart out and it was fun.
That makes me so happy. Like I can just see that. I mean, I have like a vision of that and it makes my heart so happy because that is what we should all be doing is just living life in the moment and just being, you know what I mean? And just soaking it all in. Like life is way too short. Put on the put on the skirt and go belly dance. I freaking love it. Heidi, where can people find you if they want to get in touch with you?
Oh, I'm so excited to connect with you and your fans. I have a website called theflourishinglawyer.org. I'm also reachable through, I teach at New York Law School. So my email there is heidi.brown@nyls.edu. And I'm on Instagram as Introverted Lawyer. So feel free to find me there. You'll see a lot of my YouTube stuff on my Instagram. But thank you so much for having me today. This was a blast.
Oh my gosh, you were fantastic. Thank you so much. All right, everybody. See you next week. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening into the Powerhouse Lawyers podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you catch your podcasts. If you loved this episode, I would be so honored if you left a review. And because I know you are the type of woman who wants to see other women win, be sure to share this episode with someone who needs it. By sharing it, you are empowering a fellow sister in the law to know that she is not alone, that there is nothing wrong with her, and that she can build a life and career that she loves. Thank you. See you next week. Hey, Powerhouse. As a dedicated listener to this podcast, I have curated a special place just for you. It's called the Powerhouse Lawyers Facebook group. You can head on over to the show notes, click on the link, and join our community. This Facebook group is for listeners of the show, attorneys, no matter where you are in your practice. Maybe you're a law student, or maybe you're just someone fascinated by the legal profession. This Facebook group is for you. This is a community that is going to engage in discussions on episodes. You'll get special exclusives. There's valuable networking opportunities. I'll be providing some educational content. And above all, you'll get a strong, supportive community and support system. So click on the link in the show notes below to join the Powerhouse Lawyers Facebook community, where community, knowledge, passion, and collaboration thrive. Again, head on over to the show notes to click on the link to join the Facebook group for the Powerhouse Lawyers podcast. Thanks so much. See you guys there.